As of next week, lawyers in Kamloops, Victoria, and Vancouver being asked to withhold legal aid services as a form of protest against underfunding of the legal aid system in our province. Because of the high cost of hiring a lawyer, the majority of cases heard in BC courts are citizens representing themselves without legal counsel. Now, this is clogging up and slowing down the courts. Some people aren't even getting there. We want to hear from you. How difficult is it to have your day in court in BC? How could access to justice be made more equitable for those with limited means, especially? The numbers to reach us, 1-800-825-5950. The Lower Mainland, 604-669-3733, and on the cell, star or pound 690. And with me in the studio for our discussion on this is Chris Johnson. He is with the Trial Lawyers Association of BC's Legal Aid Action Committee. And Mark Benton is CEO of the Legal Services Society. And welcome to you both. Good to have you here.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Chris, what's led the Trial Lawyers Association to call for withdrawal of legal aid services to the people who need it the most?
Well, you know, it's been a long time coming. The legal services hasn't received an increase to its budget in almost 23 years at this stage. Hard to think of anything else that hasn't had an increase in 23 years. And the result
there
of
was
that,
one, I think, in the 22 years.
Yes.
I've been reading.
There was a $2 million increase at one point, I think it was last year. That was assigned specifically to increase efficiency, so it didn't actually come through to the budget. And back in the Gordon Campbell years, the budget was cut by 40% in 1 year. So the result of that has become increasingly concerning to us, and we're at a stage now where I think it's about 80-something percent of family law litigants have no lawyers, and it's upwards of 60% now in criminal cases, which is really a big problem.
Because if you don't have the lawyer with you in the court, why is that a problem?
Well, people that are self-represented often don't understand the system, don't understand their rights, don't understand quite a bit about how things operate, and it takes the court and everybody else a lot longer to deal with those types of cases because, of course, the court has an obligation to try to be fair to all litigants.
Clogs things up in the process.
A lot.
And what about people who aren't even getting to the courtroom because they don't have the confidence or the skill and they just won't go there?
Well, there are, I'm sure, a big number of those, but I think an even bigger problem is the numbers of people who actually don't qualify for legal aid now, which has become part of the problem. You have to, I think a single mom or a single parent with one or more children has to make less than about $2,000 a month in order to qualify. So if you're talking a single parent with two kids and you're making $25,000 a year, you're not going to get any help. And I don't know how you're going to afford a lawyer on that basis.
Well, Mark Benton can help us on that. He's the CEO of the Legal Services Society. What's happened to the access to legal aid over these 23 years that Chris is describing, where there hasn't been an increase in funding apart from this $2 million bump up, in terms of the access that people have to the services?
Mark, look, there have been a couple of increases over the years, but they've been specifically directed to services, not to the tariffs we pay the lawyers. So when Chris is talking about the increases for the tariffs, he is quite right. We have not increased those amounts.
It's the fee
except
paid
one time
to the lawyers?
In about 20 years.
Yeah. Okay.
So they're far, far behind. The tariffs would, the amount we pay lawyers on an hourly basis would be about 40% higher than it is right now, even if we just kept up with inflation since we last did a major setting of it in the early 90s. So that said, what's happening with access to justice? There are broadly some real challenges out there. One of them is that we're refusing very, very high numbers of people. Two out of three people who come through the door for a family problem are refused legal aid right now.
Two out of three?
Two out of three.
And what's the consequence of that in their lives and for the rest of us?
Well, there's been a fair amount of social science research that tells us that people who leave their legal problems unaddressed experience more health problems and place more demands on the healthcare, experience social service problems. Broadly, there's an impact on the economy as families fall apart and people make less of a contribution in their community. So it's got some serious and fairly widespread problems. We know, too, that if we set up programs to address them at the front end that can get a quick, speedy resolution, that they it tends to allow people to get on with their lives and be more productive more quickly.
I note that in your own annual reports, you've said significantly more funding is required if legal services societies to continue providing even the current range of limited service to the same number of people in future years. That's from a year ago, I believe. What's happened in the last decade in terms of the number of people you are not able to help?
Well, a couple of things have been going on. One of them is that we've begun to look as hard as we possibly can at allocating the dollars as effectively as possible. We've been squeezing every dime for the last dozen years. Part of the effect of that is that for those lawyers who have continued to be extraordinarily dedicated and continue to take legal aid cases, they have been subsidizing the system increasingly year over year. I'm not apologetic about that, but it's just the reality. It's not sustainable over a longer period of time.
Chris, is that not part of a lawyer's role to provide some pro bono, quote-unquote, services to people who need it?
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. And most lawyers, certainly that I know, do quite a bit of pro bono and, in fact, have, as a result of this situation, really maxed out on that aspect of it to some extent. But it is part. And one thing I did want to raise in this discussion is really that this isn't a situation where we're asking the government to come up with new money. Back in the 90s, when Glenn Clark was the Attorney General, lawyers engaged in a discussion. We agreed to have the PST imposed on legal bills in this province. And at the time, the plan was that was going to be used to fund legal aid. Never has been. And it's now about $150 million a year, almost, that the government is raking in from this tax. And they just have failed to address
that. And about half of that goes to...
Yeah, the legal aid budget right now, Mark can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's about $75 million in total.
You have met, at least I believe you or your lawyer's committee has met with Suzanne Anton, the Minister of Justice, the Attorney General. What has she said about future funding?
She said that there is no more money and there will be no future funding. She's got to toe the line on the government's budget directions.
Are there other solutions here that you're suggesting?
Well, you know, one suggestion that the attorney has made over the years has been to increase efficiencies, and Mark is right. Everything possible has been done to do that. So I don't think there's anywhere else to turn. The fact of the matter is the government needs to address the situation, and what's needed is more money.
And the Legal Services Society, as an agency separate from government, how challenging is it to make the case and get government to open up its purse strings, Mark?
Well, Mark, that's we devote substantial time and effort to that, not just to government to open up purse strings, but to show the value of the service and the difference that lawyers like Chris make every day in people's lives. Because the whole point here is it's about solving problems and ensuring that people have access to the rights and remedies that, as Canadians, we guarantee are available to everybody. Along those lines, though, we've started to look at how we can set up lawyers to do that work more effectively. One of the things that we started a couple of years ago that we got additional government funding for this year is to expand our Family Law Line service, which is a telephone service where lawyers provide advice. We'll be expanding that further later this year. The date is yet
to be
fixed.
What kind of advice?
Well, it's just about anything. What we will do is this will be designed specifically to help people who are representing themselves, who will provide some coaching and mentoring from a seasoned lawyer who will help them guide through the family system, even though they're unrepresented. It's recognizing that there are some things that people can do with a bit of guidance. It's not going to assist the most difficult cases or the most complex cases, but we're trying to hit that middle ground. And as I was saying earlier, squeeze each dime we can to make it go as far as we can to get those resolutions for people. Really high levels of satisfaction from both the clients and the lawyers.
Mark Benton with us from Legal Services Society in our province, and Chris Johnson, the Trial Lawyers Association, their Legal Aid Action Committee. And our listeners, too, are asking you this question. How difficult is it to have your day in court in BC? And how could access to justice be made more equitable, especially for those with limited means? 669-3733, 1-800-825-5950. I recall a forum that I was part of when the Chief Justice was here, Beverly McLaughlin, and she said some people drive to the court in a Ferrari, others don't get out of the parking lot or the driveway, and I'm using that quote loosely, but essentially that's what she was worried about too, and has been talking about this for some time now. Alice in South Surrey. Please go ahead on this, Alice.
Hi, it's Allison. And my concern is there is major financial disparity in the justice system. The person who has the most money can keep you in the courts, even if you are not being adversarial. And I myself have been self-rep for 2 years after spending $170,000 on two lawyers. And I've spent 2 years trying to uphold all the judgments that were in my favor, so that even when you do win, you have lost. And as a middle-class mom of two, I'm not entitled or eligible for any support within the system. And on my most recent encounter just over a month ago, the judge refused to allow me to speak to represent myself. So this is a huge problem. And middle-class women are really suffering the most.
$170,000 that you've spent already, Allison. You've run out of money to pay the lawyers, and now you're representing yourself. Is that what it comes down to?
Yes. Yeah. And so I had a home. I was supporting my children, and I had to sell the home. I actually moved out of Vancouver. So I moved out of Vancouver to obviously support my family the best way I could. But the problem is that the courts are manipulated by the lawyers. In my case, unfortunately, I have a very aggressive lawyer who is on an unlimited retainer. And basically, every 3 months for no interest of my own, I end up back in court supporting judgments that the judges have already put down again and again and again. But there's no limit. So lawyers are able to do that.
Chris Johnson, can you comment on Allison's predicament?
Yeah, I think Allison's raised a good point, which is really about the fairness of the system. The proper funding of legal services might increase that. The system should be fair to all litigants. And when people are left to fend for themselves without legal assistance, this is the kind of thing that happens.
And here's someone who's, I think she says he's in the middle class, and or was. She wouldn't qualify for legal services anyway, would she, Mark?
Not in that circumstance, Mark. But Allison, first of all, I am so sorry that you've had this experience with the justice system. It sounds like a complete failure for you in terms of just being able to get your problem resolved and get on with your life. What you have described is a sadly common occurrence, and it's why so many people in the justice system these days are calling for a substantial review and substantial change. Changes that are more focused on the people using the system, that get them timely and lasting results that fit within the framework of the justice system rather than expensive process.
Well, what could change? A lawyer that she says is dragging things out basically has unlimited funding to do that. How do you alter that reality?
There's a number of different approaches, Mark, that are recommended. Right now, her experience is not a typical experience, but it's not extraordinarily rare either. It's stories that happen in the justice system that are about process that people simply can't afford, and that we have a system that permits that to happen is simply wrong. I don't hear anybody justifying systems that can be manipulated in a way that drive up costs and get no result. What we don't have are the checks and balances yet that allow that to happen. Certainly one of the things that could happen is you could just fund more process for all sides, but I think that what we all recognize is that an effective justice system doesn't take any more time or any more cost or any more process than is necessary in the circumstances.
Allison, thank you for calling us with your example and your concerns with the way the system is working now and having access to justice. How difficult is it to have your day in court? We're asking that. And what would make things more equitable for those who do have limited means? We're going to hear from Jamie McLaren as well in a few minutes from Pro Bono BC. And he's going to tell us about some of the free services that are there available for people. But Emily is waiting in Squamish. Go ahead, Emily.
Hello. I'm glad to hear about the family legal advice teleline that was mentioned earlier. And I really felt for Allison because I've been there and been very emotional, and it's especially difficult when there's a situation before the judge where there's a representation versus no representation, and the judge and the lawyer communicate freely, but to get a word in edgewise and be respectful of the court, it's almost impossible. What I've seen is that there's a finite amount of resources, even when the children are at risk. I have had legal aid, and I've also used duty counsel regularly, but they have no access to computers to do something as simple as show support tables. I've been representing myself and had 8 court dates since December when the children's father moved them out of the community into a dangerous situation, and it took months just to see the judge, even though we had court date after court date. If there's double booking, then we're advised to use FMEP, Family Maintenance Enforcement Program, to deal with support issues, but there is no enforcement through the provincial court system. And what I would really like to see is that they separate family, civil, small claims, and criminal courts.
Separate them. And I'll get a reaction from each of my guests on that. Chris, would that help? Would that streamline things?
I'm not sure how much I could speak to that. Mark might be able to better. My practice is mainly in Vancouver, and in Vancouver we do have that separation. There's a criminal courthouse on Main Street, and the family
She's
and small
in Squamish, and everything is lumped together, is it, Mark, in the smaller
communities? In smaller communities that happens. In fact, there's generally been a movement across Canada to more specialized courts to focus on the sort of issues that people like Emily experience. Emily, by the way, thanks so much for suggesting how you'd like to see it. I find that when I get to do these shows with Mark, it's the suggestions I hear from the audience that are among the most worthwhile things for me. As we begin to look at how you can – duty counsel, by the way, Mark, are lawyers who are in the courthouse, who are just there to help people. We typically in family court put 2 in. They're lawyers who are chosen for their ability to both apply the law fairly and get settlements for people as quickly as they can. We get a fairly high settlement rate out of them. About a third of the people get a settlement with about 90 minutes lawyer help. We usually don't think that happens with family problems, but it does with that group of lawyers. And Emily, we're trying to get them computers, right? It's part of the justice system problem is it's kind of low tech in the end of the day. So even having wireless available in courthouses so that the computers can work is a bit of a challenge, but we're getting there.
About 2 or 3 decades behind from the sounds of it.
I only wish
something basic like that.
Yes.
Yes.
But we'll get there as quickly
as we
can.
And the family law line that you're describing,
yeah.
When does it go to the next stage?
We're expecting November at this point.
November?
Is the earliest. And this is part of we're able to do this because we got additional funding from the province. We also got another system coming forward that we're talking, they'll be modeling after what they do with Dutch Legal Aid, which is an online service, which helps guide people through the process, through a question and answer process, tells them what the next step would be, and may even get them to a lawyer or some other service as soon as they can, like something Jamie McLaren might offer.
Emily, thank you very much. And Jamie is joining us right now. Another option for some people who can't get legal aid is to find a lawyer who will help them at no cost. And Jamie McLaren is the executive director of Access Pro Bono Society of BC. Hello, Jamie.
Hello.
What's the demand like for pro bono free services in BC right now?
The demand is huge. It far outstrips our supply of lawyers, unfortunately. It is something that we endeavor to serve, obviously, but it's massive and it's unrelenting.
How many lawyers in our province are doing some pro bono work?
If you talk to almost any lawyer, they'll tell you that they do quite a bit of pro bono work. Through our organized form of service, we have about 900 to 1,000 lawyers who are providing pro bono legal services through our organization. And in BC, just to put it into context here, into perspective, there are 11,000 practicing lawyers in BC.
How does someone find a lawyer who has the pro bono services that are specific to their own need at that time?
Well, we offer a system, so our system is quite accessible. We have clinics throughout the province in communities large and small, and a 1-800 number. People are encouraged to give us a call at 1-877-762-6664, and I can give that again later. But we will arrange appointments with lawyers who specialize in the areas of law that where people have needs.
So you are marshalling the lawyers to provide some pro bono services. What do you think would improve access to something like legal aid in our province?
Well, funding will always help. I mean, we've heard from Mark and Chris on that point. Funding is absolutely vital here. We need more funding for legal aid. What pro bono does is wonderful, but it's in no way a replacement for legal aid. It's meant to complement what legal aid does, and what we're seeing increasingly is that pro bono legal services are serving critical legal needs that legal aid is meant to serve. And so we're working to address that, of course, through justice system reforms and simplifying court procedures, alternative dispute resolutions, but there's a long way to go yet.
What about lawyers' fees? How much are they a part of the problem here? Many people just cannot afford the hourly rate.
Yeah, and that's our experience as well. We know that lawyers, the average lawyer hourly rate is something above beyond $300 an hour. That is way too high for most people. In fact, I think it's, you know, most people in the middle class are priced out of that service. So we're cognizant of that. And there are efforts to provide reduced rate services, not just pro bono services, but also what we call low bono services. So we're trying different strategies, but certainly lawyers do charge a hefty rate. I think that is largely a product of expensive practice. You know, you have it's a highly regulated practice, and there's high overhead costs, and the justice system just being so complex and so slow moving, it's difficult to charge much less than that and still make a livelihood.
Well, do try Access Pro Bono, and we have a link on our webpage, and we've posted the phone number as well. Jamie, thank you very much for this.
Thank you, Mark.
Jamie McLaren, Executive Director of Access Pro Bono Society of BC. There's just a couple of minutes left, but another listener who wanted to tell us about her story trying to access justice. Jill in on the North Shore. Go ahead, Jill.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to talk about the, like your first caller, when you have a really inequitable sort of playing field of a financial disparity between two people. Myself wound up basically without a home and two kids, absolutely no income. One of my children has special needs, and it makes it very difficult to work, as he's actually out of school for inordinate amounts of time sometimes. And the other party makes well over $300,000 a year. So, and when it makes it difficult, what makes it so difficult is if you don't qualify for legal aid, which I did, but those funds ran out at some point. But to be able to understand the process is partly what's so difficult. And when you're faced with that inequitable disparity, I wonder if we need sort of different tools. And I've often thought about the possibility of like mandatory arbitration. Like, what would a mandatory arbitration panel look like if the parties were sort of, for lack of better terms, forced to have to use an arbitration mechanism and removing the lawyers out of the middle of it.
Okay, that I wish we had more time, but I'm going to ask from each of my guests a comment on that suggestion.
First of all, to take Jill's comment and Jamie's comments together, the current thinking on access to justice circles is the best way to move this issue forward to make it more accessible is to simplify the system. It will become less expensive if simplified. Jamie mentioned that. Jill, I think, touched on right now how expensive the process became, or including exhausting the legal aid resources. Mandatory mediation is a live discussion in British Columbia right now.
Mandatory mediation
models before you get to court.
Which is closer to what she's describing. Yeah. What do you think of that?
That was a live discussion when I was in law school about 30 years ago. So,
meanwhile, trial lawyers, you're asking in Kamloops, Kelowna, and Victoria to withdraw services in July. What do you hope it achieves? Because you're also planning to do it in October.
Yeah, it's a plan that is going to start out primarily in Vancouver and Kamloops. Victoria is participating to some extent. And then starting in October, we've got Surrey and a number of other jurisdictions. And what we're really demanding is attention from the government on this issue. So starting in October, lawyers will be withdrawing services, and we'll be taking about a week, a month, out of the court's calendar for the next year, at least, until something happens with this situation.
Good to have both of you here for this discussion. Thank you very much. Chris Johnson, Trial Lawyers Association of BC, the Legal Aid Action Committee, and Mark Benton, CEO of the Legal Services Society.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.